はい。Okay, so yeah, my name is Afonso Oliveira, and today I'm going to show you RISC-V extension porting without the boring part. And so, first of all, like I've been working in hypervisors, and I also work at ARC-V CPUs at Synopsys, and so I've been mostly working on operating systems and also some part of the toolchain. But most importantly for this talk, I sit next to a GCC engineer, and I hear him cry a lot about how the specs change. So I try to make his life a little bit easier, and I'll try to show you how. So today we're going to go through what are the challenges that the RISC-V ecosystem currently has and its specification. Then we're going to showcase the RISC-V UnifiDB, which is how we're trying to solve this. And then we're going to show some practical use cases of binutils and chemo. So starting with these challenges with the RISC-V specification, I hope that by the end of this section, we agree that these are growth challenges, but still they exist and they're very annoying to deal with. So currently, the RISC-V ecosystem relies on multiple disconnected specifications. The most known ones are the ISA manual, obviously, and this is what most people look into, but there's others, like the assembly manual is the only source for pseudo instructions, and then there's even RISC-V opcodes, which has all the machine-readable description of instructions. And then there's SAIL that has like this formal specification that you turn into an ISS, and it's also in some way part of the specification. And more than this, when you're developing, you'll need to look specific things about other external things that are not the ISA, and these are interrupt controllers, these are MMUs, and all these specs live in different repositories that you'll need to kind of search and try to dig your information on your own, which is very annoying. And when I was in my journey of doing this, I realized that trying to connect this and create a mental model was for me very, very hard, and I was very, very confused. And so I started to dig a little bit more, like why is it this so wrong, and why is it so hard for me to grasp all these different manuals and whatnot? And so I realized, well, the ISA manual is just like one big chunk of text that's ASCII doc, and that also has many other problems than just searching information. It also has problems of like how do you verify that the information is actually correct, because it's just text, right? There's no way to verify anything. And then how do you even diversify? Because there's PRMs, there's TRMs that need to be made out of this. And are you going to copy-paste the spec? Well, that's what people do, but I think that's not the best way of doing this. And so then there's RISC-V opcodes. Yes, this is machine-readable, and it has all the instructions and pseudo-instructions, or most of the pseudo-instructions, but in reality, it's not very complete. It doesn't allow all pseudo instructions, the format itself doesn't allow it. And then RISC-V has this thing called implementation options, in which some parts of the spec change depending on how you want to implement it, and RISC-V opcodes doesn't allow you to describe this. And so, yeah, you can't really rely on this for any testings that are not encoding verification, and so it's not super complete. And I decided to understand, like, why is it like this? Like, RISC-V is growing and growing so hard, and so why do we face so many problems in this specification, which supposedly is the first step, the first stone, right? And reality is, RISC-V was first, the ISA manual was first published in 2015, and it had 5 extensions. Now, 11 years later, it has more than 200, so there's a big size difference. And even RISC-V opcodes, it was created even 5 years before the spec was first published. You can even see here the first commit in July 19, and it was refactored, but not fully refactored, and so it also went from 5 to 200 extensions. And what I see with this is that the infrastructure in which we're writing the specification was completely outgrown by the size of RISC-V, from 5 to 200 extensions, and then to all the other extensions. So the information exists in disconnected repos, and it's very hard to find it. Sources are sometimes not official, like the assembly manual is community maintained, so it's not an official ratified manual of RISC-V. And the data is not completely reliable, and there's different sources for the same data. And then, yeah, sources of truth don't encapsulate all the information. And then I took a look at the tool side, what I do in my day-to-day, and I realized, well, we have all these projects in which we use RISC-V data, and this includes like the kernel, Kimu, Jam5, the GNU toolchain, Go, Zephyr, and well, LLVM is in the afternoon, right? But all these projects have the same information, and what I realized is, if in one side we have the information, and that's very hard to find this information, in the other side we have all these projects that have the same information. So thinking about it, someone from each of these projects has to go through the same pain of looking up that information and losing a lot of hours in their lives trying to figure it to their own project. So let's say the kernel, or let's say even the Golang language, and then someone from the GNU toolchain will go and have to do exactly the same path on the same information. And I don't think this is quite optimal, and I got an idea. What if, instead of doing this all manually for all the information and all the projects, we just picked up this information and got it in a central place, well, with some refurbishing of the information so that it would be easier, and then we would create some pipeline that would allow to output the information in the format that all these projects specify. And this is one of the reasons that UDB appeared. So, what is the RISC-V unified database? I know database is not the best title, but, well, trust me, this is just a bunch of YAML files. It's very, 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 very simple and actually quite nice to use. So the RISC-V unified database is, first of all, a golden source of truth that has the RISC-V specification and all of the specification, and then even a custom overlay if you do some custom extensions or if you implement something extra to the ISA. And then there's, well, some tools that don't really matter, but then there's the use cases, right? We can generate out of these documents, as I said, different kinds of documents, but also different kinds of information for tools and even for AI, and well, I'll showcase a little bit on the end of this presentation what I mean by that. But so, to understand what kind of information we have in the UDB, I put it in just a simple table. So we have instructions and CSRs. For those of you who are not RISC-V native, CSRs are control and status registers. They are just normal registers you interact with the CPU to see what's going on. And then there's profiles, which are subsets of the ISA that people agree on to have software compatibility across implementations. And then there's even implementation-specific attributes that you can specify for a different CPU, so different CPUs all have their own perks and whatnot, and this is what this is about. And so I'll showcase what this is, how this is described for. I'll just showcase these instructions, and this is just an YAML file. So it has these few parameters which describe an instruction, which are basically the kind, the name, long name, description of what this instruction is. This is just a simple add, right? There's the assembly, and then there's the encoding variables for it, and in what location they're in the string. And then you even have this operation and sale, which is like the semantics of the instruction, so that you can generate something that is semantically valuable out of UDB. And so this is what UDB is. It's just a bunch of YAML files together with some tools, right? And what are the use cases we're targeting with this? Well, first of all, we have the docs, as I've said. Then there's even certification. So like if you want to ensure your CPU is like very, very much what you're saying it is, you can generate automatic tests out of here to run them. And then there's tools, right? Compilers, debuggers, simulators, they all have this information, this bunch of defined files. And so we can just bring this data and just convert it in what's your favorite format or the format you need it for example, binutils, and you'll just generate it automatically and save hopefully a lot of time. And so, yeah, and AI again, right? But going on to UDB in tool development, I did a proof of concept for binutils, and someone also did this for Kimu, and I'm going to showcase them both now. So how does this, well, first, why, right? I spoke about the GCC engineer I hear complaining about his life a lot, and so this is kind of the first reason I did it. So we have in ARC5 CPU cores, we have DSP extensions, and these have lots and lots of instructions, I think definitely more than 100, and these keep changing. And so the first upbringing of this in binutils looked like this. So it was 4,000 lines of declarative code, just literally a bunch of defines and just some very small tests, which, I mean, in my opinion, this looks like a very poor guy that went through a very sad afternoon to create them, and I think he would agree with me. And so how can we automate this boring part? Because those are not, that is just the start. But then the spec will change. You'll have to change one line and then the tests and then another line and then the tests. And this is really just like not the work we would prefer to be doing, right? So if we change the DB, maybe we can change automatically bin utils without going through this process. And so what we're trying to achieve that is exactly that. We're trying to achieve an aid to developers and also to ensure that no one will lose their eyesight, as well, those 4,000 declarative lines definitely suggest. But we don't try to achieve like full replication of bin utils. That's like very complex. There's design decisions made by humans and those can't be standardized. So this is not an end-to-end solution. It's really an aid so that you can save definitely some time. And so what we generate? Well, the first file we generate is RISC-V opcodes.c, which as you may see, and if you remember that YAML file that I showed, there's a lot of these parameters that are on the YAML and are just direct correlations between these two files. So like the name is definitely there. The class is definitely reliant on the extension we are using, but this is a tricky one, actually. Operands are there. We just need to map them to bin utils operands. And then match and mask are definitely in that encoding in YAML. And then there's this, well, standard match opcode and pinfo. And, well, this is bin utils specific, so it's up to the generation. But as you may see, the growth of this is already in the database. So there's also like RISC-V opcodes.h where you define match, mask, and class. We do this. And then there's even gas tests, right? We have, well, test that pass and test that fail. That's all you can have. But we can generate these tests by manipulating how the operands are valid or invalid, basically knowing what these operands are. And so here you can have a look at RISC-V opcodes.c that was generated out of UDB. So this is for the EI. This is base RISC-V instruction set, like the smaller amount of instructions. This is just like your basic branches and adds and ALU ops. And so you may see that the file itself looks very much as it should look like. There is like here one no match in. This is because, well, bin utils operands are a bit tricky to match. And in these specific cases, I decided to be very specific that we're not matching what we should be matching, and so you should manually change the generation to map one to the other. And this is what RISC-V opcodes.c looks like. This is what RISC-V opcodes.h looks like. It's just some basic defines for the same file. This is a very reduced size of it. And then this is what tests look like. You have the tests that are valid, tests that are invalid, and these were all automatically generated out of that original database. And so on this bin utils approach, I do need help from you guys because I'm in this problem with what comes first, the egg or the chicken, in which I've developed this tool, but I haven't fully tested it. And I'll probably will if you give me another year or so and that I actually have enough time to like fully test and build bin utils and port new extensions. But I actually need people that can help me on this because, well, I'm just one guy. So if you're interested in porting extensions to bin utils, please try this and let me know how it goes so that we can continuously iterate, right? And so next comes this Kimu approach. This was not done by me. This was presented by rev.ng labs, I think in collaboration with Qualcomm, by Anthony Johansson and Alessandro Di Federico, if my Italian is correct. And so what they did was an emulator in the loop design. They described these extensions inside UDB, and then they automatically generated the Kimu definition of all these extensions so that they could rapid prototype when defining an extension and go from like architect to functional model and then back and forth very closely. And this is quite interesting. There is a pipeline for downstream case and like all these tests and semantics and tiny code in Kimu. These are all generated out of UDB. And if you're interested in this, please definitely check it. Their work was very, very good on this matter. And so what other use cases can we have with UDB? So for certification and architectural tests, I talked about that earlier. Then we have like a full ISS that integrates with Renode as well. So this is different than the Kimu approach, but this is also an instruction set simulator out of the database automatically generated. And then we're using it like for documentation inside Synopsys for like programmer's reference manual, technical reference manual, and so on. And so yes, ARC5 is like the successor of ARC, and it's now RISC-V, yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah, so all other downstream use cases. So people were using RISC-V opcodes already for creating decoders in hardware and other things. So we can also do that out of UDB. And so, yeah, UDB is now being collaboratively developed. I mean, this slide was a bit old. Some of these companies were acquired, but they were all working on this, and there were a lot of mentees working on it, and now we're official RISC-V project. We are on RISC-V GitHub. Yay! So check us. Yeah, if you're interested, come see the repo. And before we go, like, if you're interested in how this UDB and thing works and how it can be used for AI, I created this small demo that is like a chatbot with UDB. And if you want to ask it some questions, it will give you RISC-V information. Thanks. Well, we have 5 minutes for questions, if you have any. Hey.
So great talk. Can you just explain, because we've had a lot of this with CGEN for 25 years. What are you doing that CGEN doesn't do?
Well, yes, I can repeat the question. So the question was, we've had a lot of this with CGEN. What can this do that CGEN can't do? So I haven't been around for that long, and I have never used CGEN. There's definitely a lot of CGEN tools in ARC5 and ARC and that were used, and none of them were solving this problem. So maybe was it because people weren't inventive enough? Maybe, but I'm not the best person to answer that question. Sorry. Hey.
What did you feel the database? I mean, by hand, taking the specs and writing each operation?
Yeah, so the question is, how did we fill the database if it was by hand? The answer is partially. So there was this RISC-V opcodes database that already had some of the information, but it was not complete enough. We used that to first generate the skeletons, and then we manually went, we had 13 mentees that we used as helps for writing that, and we manually went on and filled this database. Yes. Yes?
In your introduction, you mentioned
So the question is, I mentioned a lot of the IP that doesn't have a lot of to do with opcodes, and I'll show this quickly. So these, I believe, are the non-ISA specifications that are things like interrupt architecture, and right, this is it. Well, the thing is, some of these things are not directly related to opcodes, but first, some of them actually have some opcode relation, like the IAA actually introduces some instructions, and this is very tricky. But we do have a way of modeling things that are not ISA only. This is a new project, so like we first wanted to get the ISA and opcodes, but yes, now we're modeling the other things. But we don't do it functionally. So functionally modeling, no, but describing them as they are in text and in different attributes, yes. Is that?
So, I happen to have modeled a lot of this myself, just as big fields.
Mm-hmm.
If you're interested in that,
okay, yeah, definitely I am, yeah. Thanks. Hi.
So, does the spec ever have any incompatible changes? And how do you handle generating previous and after incompatible change?
So, the question is if the spec has any incompatibilities from like previous versions of the spec to next versions of the spec. Well, actually, I don't think so. I've modeled custom extensions in UDB that have incompatibilities, but what we have is this versioning system in which, like, if there's, for example, an instruction that has different operands in two versions, you can definitely specify like version 1.0 and 1.2. And so, yeah. Okay, I guess there's no other questions. Thank you. Thank you.